big show for you here today. It is another edition of Mock Draft Monday. We've got Josh Norris of Underdog here to give us his five favorite player to team fits that he absolutely loved from his most recent mock draft. We've got some KC Concepcion talk, an edge rusher headed to the Los Angeles Chargers, a couple of day two wide receivers to replace some missing names in the NFC East. All that and more kind of on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. It's another Mock Draft Monday, and we've got a heavy hitter. We've got one of my longtime friends. I'll say that. You know, I'll use the F word here. One of my longtime friends in the industry. It is my good pal, Josh Norris of Underdog. Josh, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, what a lovely time to be talking football. Yes, the BYB days, I've been there. I've known you since maybe like Steve Smith's fifth year in the NFL. Way back to, I don't know, like 2011, you and I have been spending way too much time on the platform once called Twitter. So I'm always glad that when I get to see your face and talk on these podcasts, these massive platforms that we have now, you know?
That's exactly right. And that's how I knew that I could strong arm Josh into coming on this show with like 2 days notice. Like, hey, pal, you can do me a favor.
Don't worry, it's come on right the show. I got you one day.
I said I owe you. Okay, so anytime you need me, I am there to provide my typical whatever people come to listen to me for, routes, all the things of that nature. But on this show, particularly Mock Draft Monday, if you guys have been listening, watching, you know how this goes. We bring in one of the great mock drafters, one of the great draft analysts in the industry. We have them give some of their five favorite player to team fits from their most recent mock draft that they absolutely love, because Josh knows this. As Josh, once upon a time, you were the most accurate mock drafter in the universe. You had a one-year true victory lap with that. So you know this, that not all 32 picks, you don't love them, but there's some that you really love. These five, that's what you're going to highlight for us here today.
100%. And don't take it away from me, Matt. I still think if you look in the Guinness Book of World Records, it's probably actually not even in there. Still the most accurate mock draft in NFL history. I'm still chasing that tail from about 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe we do it this year, Matt. Maybe this is the start of another journey of just bragging about pointless things over the summer.
That's what we're all here for, is to brag about pointless things over the summer, because that's really what the people want to hear. And of course, we'll wrap it up, as always, with our Stand on the Table segment, where Josh gives us one prospect from the 2026 NFL draft that he is willing to stand on the table for. But without further ado, let's get into another edition of Mock Draft Monday. All right, Josh, let's hear it. Who is your first favorite player to team fit from your most recent mock draft that you absolutely love? Hit me with it.
I'm mildly obsessed with this wide receiver. I know you're mildly obsessed with this wide receiver. This is KC Concepcion out of Texas A&M, and line him up with the Carolina Panthers at number 19 overall. And sure, we can talk about this team fit if you want to. Three straight first round wide receivers. Why not, Matt? I mean, you can't trade for him. You can't sign him in free agency. This is the only way to get him. And KC Concepcion just would bring different elements and a different layer to this passing attack than what Jalen Coker and Teteroa McMillan, you know, bring to this table. I understand people are going to bring up his drop rate, and we can have that conversation. I also see him make fantastic off-frame catches, corral these difficult grabs, and then most importantly, on every single snap, you have to respect his speed. He can turn the corner with swiftness, with agility, with acceleration, and I believe he can be used as a motion piece to set him up into these stacks, these offline of scrimmage, routes. But at the same time, you can also get him in static situations and allow him to win in isolation. He, to me, Matt, has an inside shot of being the number one wide receiver from this entire class.
Josh, I hate to say it, because I'd love to disagree with you here. I'd love to, embrace debate. And I pretty much co-sign everything that you just said there about Casey Concepcion, especially the last line, which is that if he ends up being the best wide receiver from this draft class, I would be 0% surprised. To me, when I come out with my stacked rankings on reception perception, he is going to be with the top receivers in this class. Like, he's in that same tier to me. And, you know, before, again, the comments light us up, people on Twitter hit us up about the drop rate, which you've already discussed. If he didn't have that drop rate, if he didn't have those catch, to me, you can tell me how you feel about it. To me, minor technique flaws that do need to get cleaned up, but I think can get cleaned up. If those weren't on his film, I think he'd be ranked more with, like, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. I don't have him as that caliber of prospect, but I think if that wasn't on his record, that's the type of wideout he is to me. From, like, a route success rate chart standpoint in reception perception, that's where he lines up with like that caliber of prospect. But I think you got to ding him a little bit if he just never cleans these drops up and things of that nature. But I mean, yeah, he just demolishes man press coverage. He's so good on the perimeter. He separates at all three levels. He's a fantastic receiver prospect that, like, from the moment I started charting this draft class, I feel like I've been hinting at it for the last few months that this was going to be my guy. But no question, Josh, this is absolutely my guy, and I'm glad that you share this opinion as well.
Yeah, we can share him, and I love draft analysis all year long. I do think maybe Casey Concepcion is part of the blind spot of what draft analysis all year long can be, where, you know, the Mekhi Lemons, the Jordan Tysons, the Carnell Tates have been mentioned as the top wide receiver for months and months and months. And so, you know, Casey Concepcion's name for many people out there might not have appeared until, you know, NFL Combine week, for example. And to me, that's not because of his tape. That's just because of who was getting buzz as the possible number one wide receiver being drafted in this class, because the tape backs it up. And Matt, I mean, this dude is tough. Like, he actually finishes all of these catches and tries to pick up as many yards as possible. There's a play versus Mississippi State. I'm sure you saw this one. They start too high. They rotate into single high. He's at X running a deep out. He bends it inside to tell the story and create as much separation for his quarterback to throw the football on this outside breaking route. Again, leans into the corner, breaks out into space. The ball is a second late. He still catches it 3 yards short of the goal line and simply carries the tackler into the end zone like it's CT versus Johnny Bananas in the challenge. Like, what he is able to do in these situations from every single alignment, running every single route, is uncommon at the college level. And then you even go back to his freshman season at NC State, he had 40 carries. And this was like legit running back stuff or wildcat stuff, and just like barreling through the defensive line and reading, you know, his blocks up front. I mean, the comparison I made was, what if Jalen Waddle was 2 inches taller and 15 pounds heavier? And that's exactly what he lines up with from Waddle's NFL combine. And that's a pretty dang good player in the league. And it's just someone I think would fit literally all 32 organizations out there. It would improve their roster.
Yeah, that Waddle comparison is a really good one. And again, Waddle went, what, sixth overall in the 2021 NFL draft. The guys I mentioned, like Olave, went 11th. Garrett Wilson went 10th. Like, this is closer to the range that I think he should kind of be considered. And obviously, we're talking 19th with the Panthers. We're gonna be breaking down that fit here in just a second. But like, yeah, that's the range of prospects that I think he belongs to. I mean, frankly, like, I see comparisons to Zay Flowers out there. I've seen like some Jordan Addison comparisons. I think what people forget is, like, he's much bigger than these guys. I mean, you mentioned it. Casey Concepcion, 6'1", 196. Jordan Addison was 5'11", 173 at his combine.
Yep.
Zay Flowers, 5'9", 182. He is a bigger player than that. You see more, I think, credible reps at X receiver than those guys. And I really liked Zay Flowers as a prospect. I was a little bit mixed on Addison. I kind of still remain a little bit mixed on Addison. But overall, I still think you see a guy that, like, with Zay Flowers, I think you saw reps of him being a solid man press beater. Like, Casey Concepcion is a fantastic man press beater. And I think Zay Flowers also had like some drop issues in college too. So I understand, like, that comparison wise, they've got the juice, they've got some of those catching technique flaws. But overall, I just think Casey gives you much more, as you mentioned, like toughness, the ability to like put the ball in his hands and ask him to create with it. I think from a power standpoint is a little bit better than some of these players we're talking about here. So yeah, I mean, he's a pretty great player.
Yeah, and those of you watching on YouTube or wherever else can see what I posted about his former wide receiver coach at Texas A&M, Holman Wiggins, who was Alabama's wide receiver coach from 2019 to 2023. Basically, every top wide receiver played under Holman Wiggins.
Not and learned bad.
Devontae Smith, the aforementioned Jalen Waddle. You could do the Jameson Williams stuff, you know, against the grain that Ben Johnson did, where, you know, everyone's pushing in one direction and there he goes in the opposite direction, yards after the catch, because again, he's a blazer with the ball in his hands. Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, John Metchie, all these guys. So yeah, this is a good coach to develop and learn under, and that's exactly what he did this past season. I love the arrogance that he plays with too. I mean, he loves a mailbox, Matt. I'm sure you noticed this.
Yeah.
There were plays where he
throw it up, baby. Like,
in press, burns the corner at the line of scrimmage, and not even 7 yards down the field, he throws it up. He's like, oh, you can throw this ball 30 yards down the field, but I am open now, and I know it, and get me the football. And everything that you hear behind the scenes, too, is that he was a leader for this team. He obviously has a speech impediment, a stutter, but he doesn't keep that from, you know, talking in front of the media at the NFL Combine, doing all the interviews. He wants to be a voice for people who feel like they can't have a voice. Again, this is just the type of player that I don't think comes around in free agency, in trades. And because of this versatility and alignment standpoint, he fits every single organization out there. And there's all these teams, and especially the first, the teams with multiple first round picks, they all want to take him with their second first rounder. Like the Dolphins, for example, to replace Waddle, or the Chiefs later on, or the Browns. And that's like close to the 25th or 28th or 30th overall picks. Matt, I think he's going much closer to like 15th overall than his consensus ranking at 28th overall.
I've tried to manifest him as a draft pick for the Rams because he fits so much totally. With like that pre-snap motion stuff, like full speed motion to the snap. We already saw him doing that in the 2025 season with the Aggies. Like he already has reps doing some of the stuff that the Rams would ask him to do. And I think he brings a different flavor to their wide receiver room. Plus their wide receiver one has had a very, we'll just call it tumultuous offseason in his own right. So definitely something they might be looking at as in terms of a round one wide out. But last thing before we talk about the Panthers fit here, our buddy Lord Reeves put this stat out that Casey Concepcion, 25% of his targets were deemed uncatchable. So several other players I actually really like on this list, one of which we're going to talk about a little bit later in terms of the uncatchable target rate. But if we're talking about, like, yeah, he had a high drop rate, he also had a lot of opportunities where he was wide ass open and the football did not go 100%. His way. So those are important to consider.
And final note in the drop rate, because we still got comments, even though we did like a 15-minute isolated video on our channel about Casey Concepcion. I thought we kind of laid out why we weren't concerned about it, but, you know, people still are. Sure, I think you can say that maybe he leaves his feet in some situations, he could stay grounded, and maybe that leads to some of these concentration drops at the same time.
Yes.
But we also have seen, Matt, some of like the best wide receiver prospects have had high drop rates entering the league. It's not necessarily a sticky stat. It can vary year to year. And it just also happens when you're heavily targeted, like when you're the primary pass catcher on a team, like just more opportunities for these things to happen. So I'm not like shushing them away. I am saying that that should not be the overriding thing of when you hear Casey Concepcion's name, it's a 11% drop rate and he can't catch the ball, because then you just haven't watched him.
Right. I mean, his drop rate over the course of his college career is like sub 7% anyways. It's really not that crazy, but it is something that he does need to get better at it. And we are adjusting for how many passes he dropped, because like I said, he'd be a guy to me, at least, that would be a tier one prospect if he didn't have some of these like clap concerns and stuff like that. But anyways, okay, let's talk about the Panthers fit here. Cause I love the player. I don't really love you sending him to Carolina for a couple of different reasons here, Josh. Number one, you're right. They've used a ton of resources at wide receiver. This would be the third straight first round pick at wide receiver. So far, Tedder McMillan, that pick looks like it's going to age pretty well. The pick before that, Xavier Leggett, was bad at the time, and I don't think it's going to age very well. They have another wide receiver in Jalen Coker, who's since they've both stepped on the NFL field, has been a significantly better player. I think I could see the logic if Carolina went this way. Like, we're just going to continue. They don't really have a ton of depth, honestly, behind some of these guys, and they tried to use a guy like Jimmy Horn as that pre-snap motion, create some leverage for Tedder McMillan. Now you're just, you know, 10xing that type of player. I understand the role in the offense, but can I also just say, from a, like, you, I think you're more pro Bryce Young than I am. So can you justify for the people here who are going to be big KC Concepcion fans why he's not just going to be like a 500-yard producer over the course of his career as like the 2A or number three receiver with your guy Bryce Young there.
Well, and, you know, he'll take away from Jalen Coker, and I know how you feel about that as well. So, like, we're attacking.
Yes,
this
I will admit. Yes, if, the, we're, if we're if we're yes. if we're if we're if we're if we're making the case here, I can also admit that I'm compromised as the lawyer for here. Yeah. The lawyer for this case.
Would going to the Panthers, Matt, be better than him going to like the freaking Cleveland Browns and catching footballs from like Deshaun Watson and and Shedeur Sanders? You know, and we can say that for a number of teams out there. So. Look, he just brings something to the table that no other pass catcher on the Panthers do or does. Over the last 2 or 3 years, if you combine those, the Panthers are basically last in yards after catch possibilities. Like, they have no one that can win with the ball in their hands. To me, they really have no one that has this ability to, and you talked about it, motion, the fly out, the speed, all of it to, you know, get these free releases and manufacture space for these players who then really maximize that space afforded to them. And at the same time, I understand people don't think like Bryce Young has a big arm, but if you look at like all the underlying metrics out there, every single one points to him, big time throws, downfield completions. It's just the percentage of attempts isn't as high. And I think with the change in play call that they have this year, they're actually going to attack that level more and more and more. So do I think that he and Tedrone McMillan could get, you know, 120 targets next season along with Jalen Coker out there? Probably not. Like, you would see, you know, just a lesser total of opportunities. But at the same time, could this be like a piece that makes that team an average to above average passing offense and like more consistent ability to produce, which I think was off and on last year? 100%. And so, to me, like, 19 is a real sweet spot of a pick for him.
I agree. Total sweet spot for him. I think he should be a top 20 pick in the NFL draft. So this would make sense here, him going in this range. I'm just not looking forward to like the summer arguments of me defending. No, this is why you should still be excited about KC Concepcion when I just get Bryce Young gifts in the replies left, right and center. So, I'm it would be a really fun, like, completes the room type of selection here. And as a wide receiver dork, that does kind of scratch my itch here. But I've already admitted some of my biases. But regardless, we both love KC Concepcion. You should be really excited about him. That's the big takeaway from this conversation. Josh, let's get to your second player to team fit that you absolutely love.
Malachi Lawrence to the LA Chargers. And let's say this at pick 22. Again, a couple months ago, Malachi Lawrence was maybe a second round pick for many people out there. The closer we get and the more you watch some of these edge rushers, these pass rushers, to me, I was thinking, well, I'm much more excited about like this tier two or tier three ones that are most frequently mocked in the second round versus the ones that are commonly placed in the first round. And Malachi Lawrence stands out. And maybe this is me just trying to do like a one-to-one replacement for what they lost in Odafe Oweh. If you go back to that trade that they did midseason, it changed their entire defense, and especially getting to the quarterback. Like, you have these power rushers per se in Khalil Mack and Thule, but what Odafe Oweh really brought to this table was his freakish athleticism. And so many sacks across the league are second phase chase down plays. And that's exactly what Malachi Lawrence is going to do with his unreal athleticism. And I also think he has a pass rush plan from the snap and from the jump. And so if you have to lose someone like Odafe Oweh, who you got for basically just Alohi Gilman and what a draft pick, and then you can't pay that in free agency, we saw how much money he got from the Washington Commanders. How are you going to replace it with a player like this? And I will always just like bet on traits with pass rushers in the NFL.
Yeah. If you look at just to speak to some of those traits, his mock draftable spider chart, Malachi Lawrence, 97th percentile in the broad jump, 96th percentile in the vertical jump, 95th percentile 40 yard dash, 87th percentile 10 yard split. So the guy obviously is a high caliber athlete at 6'4, 253. Do you think he ends up getting ranked by most people in this range, Josh, because like on the consensus board, if you look at it, he's like 45th overall. So you think right. He could be one of these guys that definitely is higher drafted than he is currently ranked.
I think 22 might even be too low. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Malachi Lawrence goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 15 overall. They are begging for an edge rusher. The Tampa Bay Bucs were unable to acquire one really in free agency. And again, this is a type that's very different than like your Keldrick Faulks and your Akeem Mezidor, who is 24 years old with a history of knee injuries. You know, this is a spry, athletic, healthy man who just wants to chase down quarterbacks and are shocked with how much and how fast his closing speed is. And just keep this in mind. Over the next 3 weeks, I think Malachi Lawrence is locked into the first round, that 15 to 22 to like 27 range makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, this pick here for the Chargers makes a ton of sense too, because you mentioned like that OA trade. It's funny. I think I remember seeing Robert Mays describe it at the time as like, if you, it's like you and your buddy in a fantasy football league and you're talking late at night, like just catching up. It's just like, you just want to make a trade, like just to feel something, yeah. I believe is the way Robert described it. And that's what it was. Like Joe Ortiz, obviously Chargers GM, used to work in Baltimore. I'm sure him and Eric DaCosta are, you know, talking about just their kids, their families, whatever. And he's like, by the way, you want to send me like a Adafe Owe and a fifth round pick for Aloy Gilman? Sure. Let's just do something to feel it, you know, feel alive here. And it ended up really changing the course of their defense because of that complementary nature that you mentioned Owe brings to the table, as opposed to the big hulking guys like Khalil Mack and Tui. Like it was a big deal for this defense. And it's something that I think they're going to really miss if they don't replace. And I know 100%. That the Chargers have serious needs still on the interior offensive line, in my opinion. I like the signing at center, of course, in Tyler Biadasz, but still they do need some guard help, no question. But otherwise, like you look at edge and it is, to me at least, pretty clearly their biggest need. You don't know. I mean, Khalil Mack is on a year-to-year deal at this point. So I think this pick from a fit standpoint makes a ton of sense as well.
Yeah. And Odafe Owe would not have gotten a 4-year, $96 million contract without this, you know, without that trade to showcase his athleticism and Jesse Minter's offense. And again, if you go and watch all of his pressures, all of his sacks, or some of them are off the snap and he definitely can run around, especially backup offensive tackles, which seems to happen more and more in the second half of seasons. But it is, and I keep bringing up these chase down second phase plays, these all elongated passing snaps, and he makes them a bit shorter than, let's say, other defensive ends would allow them in length. I mean, 4 million or 4 years, $96 million for a guy that was all athlete who really didn't improve until really his final year. And that was with a second team. And now you can just replace that one-to-one with Malachi Lawrence. Just makes a ton of sense to me.
And Josh, I just think whenever you lose like a great mind on either side of the ball, which clearly Jesse Minter is, you know, offsetting that by just making the unit more talented. And maybe it's not more talented because Adafe Owe was like the proven commodity of this deeper into his NFL career than obviously Malachi Lawrence is. But that's a great way to like offset some of that. So I think it's a big deal to sort of look at that edge position here in the first round for the LA Chargers. Let's get to your third favorite player to team fit. And this time I think we're going outside of the first round, Josh, but you can tell me if we're not here.
Okay. No, we definitely are. I'm not that much of a sicko. Hayden Winks, my co-host, might say, hey, this might be the pick at 23 overall, but for a multitude of reasons, Chris Bell, wide receiver out of Louisville to the Philadelphia Eagles at 54 overall. We'll talk about the team idea and mindset in a moment, because I think that the 2026 NFL draft for the Eagles is going to be squarely on offense. But we'll first talk about the player. What a fascinating one. He's just a better athlete than every other person he played high school ball with and basically every other player he played with in college. He is, let's say, rough around the edges. He plays with emotion. He gets in fights with corners and maybe even a referee in the future. But you also
maybe wants to fight his quarterback sometimes.
Yes. I mean, I would too if I were him. Some unreal moments of strength. Like you watch your beloved James Madison University. He shoves them at the line of scrimmage, a slant versus zone coverage. He runs to maintain distance on the yards of the catch, shrugs off a tackler for a 64-yard touchdown. If you say, well, JMU is not the best competition, he did the exact same thing against Miami's defense, and no one did that against Miami's defense. He did have a late season ACL tear. It was just an ACL on November 22nd. But with this Eagles team, I'm not saying he is AJ Brown immediately, but I think you might get first year Tennessee Titan AJ Brown stuff this year. And there's a number of ways I think a team could deploy him. And I'm excited to dive into that with you right now.
Yeah. These receiver types are so fascinating to me to discuss because, like, everybody's got a wide range of opinion. Is he the next AJ Brown or is he the next Treylon Burks / Xavier Leggett? I think that's where we have to come down on the Chris Bell discussion here. I will say this. It's funny you mentioned that JMU game. I get this comment a lot about, like, when you're charting prospects, do you account for level of competition and things like that? And to me, there's no way to truly, like, adjust that. You just obviously have to note that when you're talking about, oh yeah, Sky Moore's got great reception perception numbers, but he's playing like nobody's back. Do you, by the way, I brought this up on a recent show. Remember the freaking Corey Davis went fifth in the NFL draft
and
like played at Western Michigan and never did any pre-draft testing? There's no way that would happen now, by the way. Like, there's no way that would
Matt,
happen.
Who was the white wide receiver that was with him too? Like not Blankenship, but something like that. Do you remember?
I don't know.
I mean, that name is case, but even he had like some love out there. I mean, it's amazing all these players that we got. Devin Wiley. I mean, now that I just think of.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I fell for, I'll anyways, hand up. Ahead. Like, I liked Sky Moore despite the fact that he was playing, you know, nobodies. But it's like, yeah, he has great numbers, but that doesn't mean he's the best receiver in the class. Obviously, that's how you do the adjustment for level of competition. But my point in saying that is that, like, I thought Chris Bell actually did not play all that great against JMU throughout the course of that game, but then he has that one play where he just houses it because he's a better athlete than everybody. And I still think there's a good chance he's going to have those moments in the NFL, even if he never comes, like, fully brings it all together, because he is that much of a big time athlete at 6'2", 222. Man, I think, like, he's a guy too that you look at his, like, you look at his frame, I think he could put, like, more muscle and explosiveness on. Like, he's a very enticing player. Now, some of the negatives are, I think the focus comes in and out. I think his zone coverage recognition for a guy that I think his zone coverage recognition, spatial awareness for a guy who plays a lot underneath is super whatever and forgettable at times. He only lined up on one side of the field, at least in the games that I charted. He's only been on like a right wide receiver. That is typically a red flag for me, but it at least means he's a developmental guy. But for a team like the Eagles, if they hang on to AJ Brown this year, I think that makes a lot of sense. And there are parts of Chris Bell's game, get the ball in his hands. He does run a three route combination very well. His man coverage work, I think, is pretty solid. So there's definitely something there. But still on that range of the next AJ Brown to Xavier Leggett, I probably fall somewhere in the middle ish.
I'm not calling him AJ Brown. Okay. I just want to put that on the table. I am not that much of a lunatic. Just a couple notes I want to bring up here. I'm totally with you that the hand stuff comes in and out. Like, for being a power guy, he had a straight up drop over the middle of the field versus Bowling Green. Other times he really didn't come down with the ball through contact. But then you watch that catch, I think it was versus SMU, where he just gets demolished and still goes up and grabs it above every other person. Big time elevation. What if the perfect pipeline for early production here for Chris Bell was like the Chiefs using Rashee Rice? Because some of the slot snaps that I did see from Chris Bell, that it was just the crossers and the drags over the middle, get the ball in his hands and just, again, let him out athlete people. And then hopefully he can just develop into being more of a complete wide receiver once he reaches the league. But like, at the very least, you know, he maybe can be a 60-65% snap player as your third wide receiver if you also incorporate two tight end sets and just use that athleticism on like really simple routes. And I think like that is kind of part of and why I think that Philadelphia Eagles make so much sense for him too.
Yeah, see, I think he's much more on like the Quentin Johnston spectrum, not the hands issues. I'm just talking about like Quentin Johnston as a mover. I think he's much more on that spectrum than he is like the AJ Brown, Xavier Leggett. And by the way, I keep bringing up Xavier Leggett. Xavier Leggett was like a fifth year breakout player in college. Chris Bell is still right now 21 years old. So there is definitely some like positivity in his end on that. But for Quentin Johnston, he's a guy that I always thought like he probably should be used as a Rashee Rice type. Now Rice is definitely bigger and more powerful, but in terms of like just get the ball in his hands and let him cook, and then hopefully he develops by year three, he's more of a true wide receiver. I think there's a chance that like that is the path for Chris Bell. And if we're talking about that, as a second round draft pick, that's totally fine. Like, you know, if you're taking this guy in round two, like, bet on the traits, bet on the upside, and hopefully, again, you don't just push him into the deep end right away. You let him grow and develop. I definitely think there's something here for this guy.
Hayden brought up in our video that, you know, this might not be viewed as a high floor player, more like a high ceiling player. But Matt, we also see the quote unquote high floor players entering the league end up having no floor and also being busts. Like, the,
oh, yeah.
Jahan Dotson, the Jalen Polks, like, there's a whole bunch of that stuff.
Okay,
like, maybe it, floors don't exactly exist in the league. And so maybe kind of taking chances on players like this in the second round can make sense when they do have obvious areas where they do win and they are freakazoid athletes on top of it. And then you just try to get with your coaching staff. By the way, his college wide receiver coach is Deion Branch. Who knew that, like, Deion Branch was coaching wide receivers? It's really interesting. Like Leonard Hankerson, is that in college level too? Anyways, we don't have to go down that path. But yeah, I mean, I also view the Philadelphia Eagles passing game based on, we got to run the ball against too high and we got to do it well enough to force you into single high. And when we force you into single high, we have athletes on the perimeter that can run nine routes or, again, just get open or win with their power or athleticism versus the cornerback against them. That all kind of completely lines up here with Louisville, who also ran stuff under center, forced a lot of single high. And some of his best plays, I thought, were out of those looks. Again, just being a better athlete than his opposition.
Yeah. First of all, speaking of the Eagles, if you're going to talk about Jahan Dotson on the show, you address him by his full name, which is Super Bowl champion Jahan Dotson. That's number one. If you're going to disrespect Jahan on this show, you're going to at least call him Super Bowl winning Super Bowl champion Jahan Dotson. Secondly, with the Eagles, whether they're able to pull it off, whether their quarterback is able to pull it off, is a separate question. But I think it's pretty clear, like, they're going to try to overhaul that offense in a pretty dramatic way. They're going to try to be more of, like, what the current offensive meta is than what they have been during the vast majority of the Jalen Hurts era with Sean Mannion as the offensive coordinator. You think about some of the receiver prospects they've brought in, like Omar Cooper Jr. That's not a guy that would typically fit in their old world of offense. It does really fit within this model. And I think Chris Bell, if we're talking about, he needs a little bit of role catering early on in his career, he's going to get that, whether it is with A.J. Brown on or off the roster. Because if you're thinking about, like, this is a two receiver set, I'm imagining that, like, Devontae Smith can handle all the big boy wide receiver stuff. And whoever this new player is, if it isn't A.J. Brown, can do all the fun, you know, move around stuff, whether it is an Omar Cooper Jr., whether it is a Chris Bell in round two. I think that makes complete sense, and this would be a good spot for a guy like Chris Bell to end up at. All right, we are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we've got more player to team fits that Josh absolutely loves. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're here with Josh Norris, continuing to run through his most recent mock draft and some player to team fits that he absolutely loves. Josh, bring us to the running back position. Who are we highlighting here?
Not round one, because almost certainly that should be only Jeremiah Love, unless John Schneider does something absolutely insane, which he has been known to do, either with the 32nd pick or maybe even moving up or back from that one or up from 64. I mean, Matthew Harmon, we've seen John Schneider take the likes of Kristen Michael, of Rashad Penny, maybe much earlier than others, and maybe because of athletic profiles. Why not throw in arguably the best athlete size, speed-wise, in Mike Washington Jr. out of Arkansas to this same team? 6'1", 223, 151-10, 4'3", 340, 39-inch vert, 91st percentile, and then a 93rd percentile broad jump on top of that. I mean, again, John Schneider changed some of his ways, changed some of his drafting, won a Super Bowl. They desperately need a running back, but maybe you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and he kind of falls back into his same kind of profile he loves at this backfield spot. Again, the Kristen Michaels, Rashad Pennies, and takes Mike Washington earlier than other people expect.
CJ Procise too is another former Seahawks running back. He was just brought up on a recent show too, in our running back prospect preview. He was one of these guys too that was like a 220 big time, like 75th percentile 40 yard dash
Robert
type
Turbin.
So there's Yeah, there's definitely a type. And John Schneider's been there so long, we can track his movements throughout the course of his tenure there at the running back position. So this makes a ton of sense for him to go for this like size, speed, freak show type. What do you think about Mike Washington as a player? Because Ray Garvin and I just earlier this week did our running back preview. He was a fun player to discuss. So just kind of what's your thoughts on him as a running back?
He definitely has strengths and he definitely has weaknesses. If things are blocked up well, he has long strides and chews up a bunch of ground. I do think maybe early on with his vision, it's better than maybe given credit for, but I think his biggest issue is his balance. He just gets chopped down way too easily. And sometimes that happens in the open field. So this is a very different player, I think, than Kenneth Walker, who can make seven people miss at behind the line of scrimmage. And still that only equals, you know, a 1 yard carry. So he gets dinged for it. Mike Washington is more of a rumbling, bumbling, sometimes stumbling runner. But if you know their blocking improves like it did down the stretch, point A to point B, he can still reel off explosives. And we saw how important the explosive rushing game, not only for the Seahawks, but just across the league, it has become. And I mean, this team might have a starting running back in week one on the roster right now.
I mean, they definitely don't. I've seen people try to get excited about the Emmanuel Wilson thing. Like, come on, that's not a starting running back in the NFL. Good reserve player can get you out of a pinch, but still. I will say this, just funny, you mentioned the Kenneth Walker comparison. I agree. I don't think he's like an exact same type of running back. Like Kenneth Walker definitely to me has more wiggle to him at that size, but there are some similarities in what you could kind of expect maybe from a volatility. If you're okay with, and totally. Maybe they're not okay with,
high variance
with Kenneth Walker. Yeah, he's a high variance runner, obviously. And I think that's definitely the case here for Mike Washington. It's just different that, I mean, similar with Kenneth Walker, you want him to be kind of a one cut and go. Like, here's your lane, hit it. Don't be doing a lot of dancing behind the line of scrimmage. Just hit that hole and like, man, you're bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else. Again, Mike Washington doesn't have the same, I would say, lateral agility or wiggle to him. He's much more of a stiff runner. But very similarly, like, you want to give that guy a lane, one cut, hit it, and rip off explosive plays. So there's some kind of like bones to build off in the running back position from the guy that they just had last year.
Yep, I totally agree. And who even knows like how much of a change of success and of that sort without Clint Kubiak this offense is going to have. But man, they got to their peak when it came to, you know, Gray Zabel, second half of the season, really like gelling along with, you know, some other players along that offensive line. And I mean, the Ken Walker thesis, I guess, worked out for them, where maybe one of their goals for splitting carries was to say, well, we get him in the playoffs, so we get him for all 17 games.
Keep him fresh.
Obviously, that turned into a Super Bowl MVP. Keep him fresh. Same time, Matt, I would have loved to see more Ken Walker last year in terms of red zone usage, because we obviously see he can do it, and just more overall usage versus a true 50-50 split, because I think you and I can both say he's a better running back than Zach Charbonnet. But in the end, you know, it doesn't matter what I think for my fantasy football scores. It matters that they lifted the Lombardi trophy at the end of the day. So I almost certainly in the early part of the draft, unless like they are completely sold on the Holani and Emmanuel Wilson combo, the Seahawks are going to pick a running back, and there's not many to pick from. I mean, they're not going to be in the Jeremiah Love stuff. I know you had an interview with Jerrion Price earlier this week, and then Mike Washington's the other, and there
Jonah
might
Coleman.
Be a couple more. Yeah, Jonah Coleman. Who did I say Jerrion Price? I meant Jonah Coleman at Washington. But yeah, this is just someone that fits the type and the style that John Schneider has done for decades, it feels like at this point. And I don't know if you escape that still if you're a decision maker in the league.
I think that would be tough to escape that. So I like the call there. And at the same time, too, like one, we don't know what Brian Flores' vision for the offense is going to be. But if we're going to just kind of maybe piece the dots together here, he was the run game coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, coming over here to Seattle to be the offensive coordinator. It certainly seems like they want to double down on this outside zone system. And I do think, again, one cut, hit it. Outside zone stuff, like it does fit Mike Washington, maybe not perfectly early on in his career. Maybe he starts off in a little bit of a split with Emmanuel Wilson and then eventually Zach Charbonnet, but he could certainly grow and develop into being that guy. And I will say this, Josh, like whether it is, well, regardless of who the Seahawks take, and I do think they'll take a running back probably on day two, I would guess. that whoever that running back is going to be the favorite to like leapfrog in your dynasty rookie drafts. And I think especially if it's the speed scores going around about Mike Washington, he's going to be definitely a post-draft riser if this scenario comes to pass.
Yeah. Again, we all say maybe third round here. John Schneider does not care what the consensus board is. He does not care what the community thinks out there. He is going to do what he wants. I am not saying 32 overall, but like a short drop down from 32 back into the early part of second round, and then they still take their running back with the first pick that they have in the class would not stun me in the least.
All right, let's get to your fifth and final favorite player to team fit. We're going back to wide receiver world here.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Jeremy Bernard joining the Washington Commanders. And I'm sure you've watched Jeremy Bernard at this point. He can fit every organization because he does every single thing out there. Like he lines up as a static X. He lines up as the movement guy at the Z. He's freaking the cool plays. He's the manufactured touch guy as well for this team. They built this passing offense around Jeremy Bernard. But the reason I like the fit here with the Commanders, because we know who Terry McLaurin is. He's very good at what he does, and namely his connection with Jane Daniels on these vertical routes. But if this team wants to, you know, attack more over the middle of the field with David Blau coming from, like, if we can call it a Ben Johnson coaching tree, and I know he's a part of this, and they want to get kind of more pro style, which is the rumor so far, who is going to be running those in breakers, those digs, those middle of the field stuff? And Jeremy Bernard, it felt like he did that 17 times every single tape you watch of Alabama this past season.
100%. I mean, he is I think I said this to your co-host there, and obviously mutual friend over at Underdog, Hayden. I think I said this to him at one point on Twitter, like dig route merchant, parentheses complimentary, Jeremy Bernard. Like this guy just runs those dig routes, middle of the field, extremely well. I'm a big fan of him. Not, I don't know how high the ceiling is necessarily, but I think I said this back at the combine. He just looks like the ultimate glue guy to a wide receiver room. And that really has 100%. Been something that has been lacking in this Washington group. I mean, Terry McLaurin is awesome. And Terry McLaurin, I'm actually really excited to see him in this offense because I agree with you. And everything I've heard, everything I've kind of just read and kept up with is that, yeah, they are definitely making quietly a pretty big transition to what the offense is going to look like. It is going to come off that Ben Johnson world much more than Cliff Kingsbury and what it's been the last few years. I'm excited to see what Terry McLaurin gets deployed like in more of an under center world, more of we're trying to attack over the middle of the field. But still, for the most part, he's going to be a vertical guy that's working on the perimeter. And Jeremy Bernard is somebody that can work over the middle of the field and kind of bring that together. Plus, Josh, if they trade, or they probably don't trade for, but if at somehow, some way, Brandon Ayuk ends up on this roster, you're going to need a little bit of insurance. You're still going to need a little something.
I was going to bring that up because let's just take a stroll through the Commanders wide receiver room outside of Terry McLaurin, okay? It's Treylon Burks, Luke McCaffrey, Van Jefferson, De'Ami Brown, Jalen Lane, and then you get to like Nick Nash and Jacoby Jones and Ja'Cory Brooks. Yeah, they need a metronome.
Nash is on this roster?
They need someone steady out there. And yeah, utility player, glue guy, all of it. It's also amazing to me, you know, he was at Washington, Jeremy Bernard, played next to Rome Odunze, Jalen Polk, Jalen McMillan when the coaching staff left and went to Alabama. They're like, Jeremy, you got to come with us. And he did. And then I know that Ryan Williams, and we'll talk about him next offseason, had a huge decline in his play this year versus his freshman year.
Yeah.
They built the passing offense around Jeremy Bernard. He should not be getting shovel passes. He should not be getting, you know, throwback screens. He should not be getting handoffs from the backfield. And he got it all. And he was like a 3.5 out of 5 stars in just about everything. If you want to be negative, that's fine. And say, well, where's the 4 and 5 star stuff? I would also say his vision with the ball in his hands to like maximize that blocking, I thought was quite good. At the same time, I believe the Commanders, other than the Patriots, were in for Romeo Doubs. And the easiest comparison you can ever make for Jeremy Bernard during this draft class is just to say he's Romeo Doubs.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I think he probably, Doubs is funny because he's ended up being like this on ball X receiver. And I don't think that's necessarily what I want Jeremy Bernard to do. But otherwise, like the routes that they are successful on, that like ability to just kind of make the first guy, like Bernard is like able to make that first guy miss. He's not going to stack these massive long runs or anything. He's not going to smoke man coverage necessarily, but very good zone beater. Somebody that is a really smart guy working over the middle of the field, which is exactly what Romeo Doubs is, working over that middle of the field. So that makes a lot of sense. I would have maybe said he's like what people wanted Elik Iomanner to be last year. And Iomanner was the guy that I compared to Romeo Doubs. So we're kind of on that like same spectrum of wide receiver here.
Kendrick
again,
Bourne.
It just makes, yeah, Kendrick, again, glue guy. Kendrick Bourne, the ultimate wide receiver three glue guy. He's going to be gluing together whatever they're doing in Arizona this year. So, yeah, I think Jeremy Bernard, you're so right to bring that up, that they built that whole passing offense around him. And none of the guys that the Commanders added this year, whether it's none of those guys are like, hey, that's going to stop us from making any level of wide receiver addition, whether it's a day two pick of Jeremy Bernard adding Brandon Ayuk at some point. Shout out to Nick Nash, by the way. You brought his name up. He turns 27 in July. That's an old second-year wide receiver. I remember he was like one of the last guys I charted last year. And I can specifically remember because we were in LA for our draft show and I met up with James Coe for drinks and dinner that night. And he's like, are you done with the rookie roundup? He's like, yeah, I just charted some guy named Nick Nash who's going to be 27 next offseason.
Yes.
Like just, that's when it's time to stop. When you get to the 26-year-old rookie, that's when it's time to stop.
Right. Now, do you think someone like Nick Nash, who, you know, in the spreadsheets looked awesome because of his yards per route run and maybe how many yards he put up in every game, do you think that might have been easier because he was 25 years old going up against 19-year-olds on a college football field?
Yes, as somebody that fell for the Andrew Armstrong profile last year, I can confirm that, yes, that is correct. Yes, you could lead the SEC in wide receiving yards when you are 24 and everybody else is 18. You could definitely do that. Yeah. And if you're doing it at San Jose State like Nick Nash, you could definitely do it.
Just a final point, and you guys brought up this stat previously from Rich Rebar. Jeremy Bernard's season could have had even more production on the same topic. If you look at it, he was fifth in this class in terms of percent of his targets that were uncatchable at 27%. We don't have to dive into the Ty Simpson conversation. It was a tale of two halves for him of the season. Mm-hmm. You could watch that game against Oklahoma. Really, I mean, Jeremy Bernard came out of the backfield, got open over the middle of the field. It's a 7-second throw that Ty Simpson has, and he just totally airmails him over the top. And that was the same against Auburn on top of it, too. So it's it was rough stuff and just off target, off frame. It was really frustrating. And like Jeremy Bernard didn't show any frustration and still like was a leader of that team. So again, we keep coming back with glue guy stuff, but he is just so steady and like steady guys in this position now, because the best free agents, let's say the best talents don't make it to free agency. Even the steady ones now get paid like ridiculous levels. That taking this guy in round two, when he previously might have been a round three, round four guy, is totally fine in my book.
Yeah, I know we keep saying the glue guy stuff and people probably aren't getting excited about the ceiling there. But listen, if you're a glue guy and you hang around, I mean, this was my thing when guys like Wandale Robinson and the aforementioned Romeo Doubs and even Alec Pierce were eligible for free agency this year. It's like, aren't you just kind of better off trying to find the next version of that guy that just hangs on to a starting job for 3 to 4 years, and by their fourth season, they've peaked into the best version of themselves? And I know people talk about that with like, oh, the Chris Brazels and like these big upside guys. What if they become that? Well, those are the guys that have trouble hanging on to a starting job for 4 years. You know who doesn't? This type of player like Jeremy Bernard. So yeah, by his fourth year, he's somebody that the dynasty community never got excited about because he's a rookie face planter or whatever. And then by his fourth year, it's like, that's a pretty credible NFL player who can go over the middle of the field where teams are trying to attack right now. So yeah, I kind of like him relative to consensus this year. And I think this is a really good pick by you.
I throw in Marvin Jones as a comparison too. Again, someone who did just about everything at multiple different stops. The final note, and the biggest positive, I think, for Jeremy Bernard is whatever he can control, he tries to master. Okay? So we talked about the vision and picking up yards after the catch, reading his blocks. I thought he might be the best in terms of sideline awareness and getting his feet in bounds on like these toe-tapping things. I thought catch technical skill was totally there. It was textbook. He's just not going to be, you know, a 99th percentile athlete. He's not going to be 6'4". He is limited maybe by things that are out of his control. But what he can control, he does really well. And this even goes into the blocking aspect. Alabama would bring him in very close in these condensed splits next to the line of scrimmage, and he would try to pin these linebackers. You watch against Oklahoma, he would try to get to the second level. Can be hit or miss at times, but like, he gives it. He cares. He tries to be the hammer in those situations. So yeah, he is someone that you can easily see have a 10 to 12 year career, I think.
I know we get caught up on the high tier athletes at this position, but listen, all those things you just described there, we've talked about here, good hands, going over the middle, blocking, kind of sounds like what some of the most productive wide receivers in the NFL right now are becoming very good at. So it's definitely an archetype, I think, that matters a lot more for a guy like Jeremy Bernard. So I'm glad we had this conversation because we haven't really talked about it much on this show yet. But we are going to take our final break. We come back. Josh is going to quickly give us his player that he is willing to stand on the table for in this year's NFL draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time to stand on the table.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
AJ, through the table!
That's right, this is what the people are here for, Josh. They want to know, who is the prospect you are... Nobody can make it through that segment intro without laughing, by the way. I've seen it like 50 times. I still laugh about it. But who is the prospect, Josh? Get serious now. No more laughing. Let's be serious here. Who is the prospect
yes.
you are willing to stand on the table for in the 2026 NFL Draft?
For a multitude of reasons, Georgia Tech defensive tackle Jordan Vandenberg, and he won't be anywhere close to the first round. 6'3". 310 pounds. You know me, Matt. I kind of fall in love with these interior defensive linemen that are just peak athletes. This goes like all the way back to Malik Jackson, Milton Williams a couple of years ago. I mean, I have Javon Hargrave and Grady Jarrett, Sheldon Rankins. Like, I can go down further and further down the list. Vandenberg's just a sick athlete. I mean, 99th percentile shuttle at 4.19, Matt. That's a faster shuttle time then Garrett Wilson, Alec Pierce, Khalil Shakir, Michael Wilson, DK. I mean, a bunch of wide receivers in this class, including Denzel Boston and the aforementioned Jeremy Bernard. That's with over 100 pounds on his body compared to them. A 4.19 shuttle. That's also 99th percentile jumps he has in his back pocket and a sub 5.40. The story here, I don't know if you want to go to me to go into monologue here, but the story is incredible.
He's
from South Africa. He moved to Atlanta when he was 10 years of age. He went to Penn State after community college, then transferred to Georgia Tech. So he's older than a lot of these other prospects. But also when you're older, you're a bit more mature. So with his NIL money, guess what? He bought a laundromat this past year. He owns a laundromat called Always Fresh. So does he have dual income possibilities? 100%. Does he have a good head and shoulders? 100%. Does he play like he has a jetpack attached to his ass to get up the field and make these tackles for loss and sacks? 100%. So there's a lot to love here, I think, about Jordan Vandenberg, who also checks the name box here with prospects.
Well, listen, that's got to be the first time definitely the first time we talked about Jordan Vandenberg on this podcast. Probably the first time we've ever talked about a player, at least have mentioned it. I'm sure at different times there have been players that have owned a laundromat, but I think it's definitely the first time it's come up as a positive on a scouting report for a player. I'm fired up here, Josh. This is pretty electric. You rattled off all those names to bring it back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, how we have known each other for way too long. I was thinking about when you were ripping off all those names there. I feel like you and I probably had conversations about like interior disruptor Dominic Easley back in the day. Like, that was the first guy I thought of that went like really high. Yeah 6'2", 288. This guy's a little bit
I tried to donate my knee ligaments and he refused, Matt.
I don't know that I've seen you work out at the combine or you did like a combine video a few years ago back, I think, when you were at NBC. I don't think your knees, no offense, pal, is going to be doing Dominic Easley or anybody else any good.
Oh, that's so good. Just real quick, going through this, when you asked me to like find someone to pound the table for, and I was hoping to bring up a wide receiver, Matt, I got to say, I found more wide receivers that I would like just not draft simply. And maybe that's just my type.
Wow.
Like, I wanted to bring in like
a
Ted Hurst or a Chris Brazel or like a Zachariah Branch and all these guys. But like, there were more turn offs than turn ons for many of these names. So we have like individual videos about all those guys on our channel or coming in the next few days. So I just, you know, wanted to give a guy a shout out who wasn't even invited to the NFL Combine, who is a freakazoid.
That's crazy.
And, you know, he again, he's older than some prospects. And we just talked about that with wide receivers. Sure. So maybe that's one reason why he had some extremely dominant reps. But at the same time, like, these interior disruptors are difficult for these teams to get in the open market, to even draft. And that's the quickest way from point A to point B to the quarterback or to for tackles for loss. And so I am rooting for the South African Jordan Vandenberg here.
Oh, no, you mentioned it. Like, one of the biggest themes from this past year's NFL season, if you looked at the teams that were remaining in the Final Four, were some of the best, like, interior disruptive teams. Teams with, you mentioned Milton Williams in the Super Bowl. Seattle could throw guy after guy after guy at you in terms of interior disruption this year. And then you get to the free agent market. It's like, too bad, ain't none of those available this year, pal. None of them are available on the open market. You got to draft these guys. You got to look in unique places, looking for a guy who's not even invited to Combine. Definitely a unique and good place to look if he's not just hanging out at his laundromat. Josh, appreciate you, buddy. You've already mentioned it several times, so you're clearly on the topic here. You know what you're doing. You're a professional. That you and Hayden do a great job with your individual prospect breakdown videos, but tell the people what you're working on heading into this year's NFL draft that they can check out.
Yeah, just go search on YouTube, Underdog NFL Draft, and yeah, we have got 10 to 12 minute prospect profiles on a bunch of wide receivers, also tight ends and like Kenyan Sadiq and whatever the heck Eli Stowers is as a player, some quarterbacks, and we're going to get to running backs on top of that. So, I mean, Matt, I got to say, sometimes I wish like this next month would slow down so I could watch all of these prospects, but I know I'm always in the minority opinion on that and people just want the draft to get here, but we're on top of it. That's for sure.
Oh, no, I say it all the time. I have the most conflicted feeling about the next month, in that, you know, I'm already thinking about May. I'm taking some time off in June this year. We're going to Portugal. I'm jacked up for it. My eye is looking towards the future, and yet I also really need time to slow down, because I got a ton more charting to do and a ton more content to push out here on this show as well. Josh, appreciate you, man. You and Hayden do great work. Definitely everybody should go. If you're watching this show on YouTube, you're already probably watching their show, but make sure you go check out all of their videos as well. That is going to do it for another edition of Mock Draft Monday, but we will be back tomorrow as Scott Pienowski returns the show to fill in for Justin Boone. We continue our Teams That Shape the Draft series by looking at the contenders. They're maybe just like one good draft away from absolutely trying to push it in and win it all. That's going to be live here at 2 p.m. Eastern on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.